Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking all things Tennessee Vols and SEC as well. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Blake Topmeyer, USA Today columnist for the SEC, to the program. Blake, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking time to join us.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing great. Hope you are as well. And, Blake, I want to start on the Tennessee front. Josh Heupel addressing the media yesterday, and obviously a big talking point right now is who is going to play quarterback for Tennessee, with Joe Milton and Harrison Bailey, Hendon Hooker, Brian Maurer in the mix at quarterback. Number one, what do you make of the challenge that Josh Heupel has coming into year one with this Tennessee program, and how do you think that he'll handle the quarterback situation with four guys competing for that spot?
Well, I think you can go back to every Tennessee coach since Philip Fulmer and say that they all stepped into a challenging situation. But I think the challenge that Heupel finds kind of blows all of his predecessors out of the water. I mean, the roster situation that he inherited, I find pretty bleak. The cloud of the NCAA investigation that was left by the previous coaching staff is another obvious hurdle. I mean, I think he steps into, a real tall task, in this situation in Knoxville. As far as quarterbacks, though, he has options. I don't know that he's got any stars. I suspect that he doesn't, but he has more options than, say, Jeremy Pruitt did in his first season in 2018, when it was either Jarrett Garantano or Keller Crist. You know, Pruitt basically had two options that year. Heupel finds himself with four guys with multiple games of starting experience. He had an opportunity to bring in his own guy in Joe Milton. You know, he's the only one of the four that's a Heupel recruit, I guess you could say. He brought him in through the transfer portal after he was inconsistent and lost his starting job at Michigan. I think Milton's the favorite. I think a lot of folks think Milton's the favorite. I'm one of them who falls into that camp. Heupel likes big-armed quarterbacks, guys that can push it downfield. Milton is certainly that. Certainly he was inconsistent at Michigan, but I think Milton's a favorite for the job. I'd be curious to see, though, how many quarterbacks play the first couple weeks of the season. Heupel yesterday sounded like someone who's a little bit leery of a two-quarterback system. But when you got I don't know if you want to call it a free pass in year one, but certainly lessened expectations for Heupel this season, I think he should play multiple quarterbacks early in the season and try to prolong this competition and make sure he makes the right choice for the long term.
And also manages the roster, right? I mean, that's always got to be a consideration. You give one guy the job early enough in camp, and what's your quarterback room look like? You know, like by mid-September.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, being able to hang on to multiple of these guys, you know, throughout the whole year, that's the bonus. I think in particular Harrison Bailey, I'd be curious to see how he develops long-term. You know, I think there was so much buzz for him coming into last season. We all wondered, I think, why it took as long as it did for Jeremy Pruitt to turn from Garantano to Bailey. And then when he finally did, Bailey flashed some potential. I mean, he was inconsistent with his deep ball. He didn't show off the biggest arm, but he was pretty accurate. And I asked Bailey yesterday about the perception that arm strength is a weakness for him. I was just curious to see how he'd react, whether he would rebuff that or admit it. And I thought his answer was interesting. Bailey, he admitted that his arm strength had problems last year. He said that historically he's had a strong arm. He said his mechanics got out of whack last season, and that he's worked to improve those this offseason. He thinks he's fixed that issue, and he expects to throw a better deep ball this year. Now, maybe that's just preseason talk. Maybe that's you know, a guy trying to cover for maybe what his weakness was last year. Hey, your deep ball wasn't very good last year. What was basically, and he thinks for the issue, and he thinks he's addressed it. If that's really the case, then I'm this year from Harrison Bailey, because I thought on the poise and the accuracy front, he showed
Husker fan.
I think we're having some phone issues with Blake. We'll try to get reconnected with him coming up here in just a few minutes, but the phone kind of cut out on him there. But, yeah, it is interesting as to Blake's point about Harrison Bailey and his arm strength. It's going to be something to watch because I remember him coming in and the talk about him was, yeah, that guy could sling the ball over the field, and we just didn't see that a whole lot. Now, granted, he didn't get in until the last part of the season last year, but did not go well for Harrison Bailey in terms of throwing the ball down the field. Now, a lot of that was Jim Chaney. They never ran routes down the field, so there was that. We didn't really get to see a whole lot of that.
Jim Chaney forgot to send receivers out into the field to catch the passes.
Yeah.
Other than that, it would have worked fine. Yeah, I thought Bailey looked okay, but again, true freshman, the hype is almost always overblown with these guys. You got Blake again?
We do not have him yet. Okay. We're looking to get him back.
It sounded a little bit like me when I'm trying to pretend like I'm trying to hang up. I'm breaking out. Sorry, I got to go. Okay.
All right. We'll try to get Blake back in there.
But it's interesting, too. Like, I don't think of this. I think of this offense as get it out. Quick. But, yeah, if pushing it downfield and having the big arm is a big priority for Heupel, I mean, I think Milton – there's one reason that Milton – would be considered the favorite by a lot of people. Big arm. A big guy. Also, the QB run game is more activated, I'd say, with him than probably any of the others. So.
Although Hendon Hooker, he can run the ball a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, Brian Maurer.
Yeah.
Really, if you want to get, it's like he's just being discounted, and that's probably accurate.
Yeah.
But, it's going to be interesting. Really, so much of it comes down to, like, how has Milton done here in the short term in catching up? Because it is very different from what he did at Michigan. Hooker, it's not different. Not very different. Tempo is faster, but even, a lot of the same terminology.
Yeah, a lot of the same terminology. And we have Blake back on the line now. Let's go back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome back, Blake Topmeyer from the USA Today Network, SEC columnist. Blake, sorry about that. Thanks for coming back on with us. And talking Tennessee defensively, doesn't look like there's a whole lot there for Josh Heupel and this staff. How do you try to navigate through this with a year like this if you're Heupel, where you just know from a quality perspective and a depth perspective, probably not a whole lot there on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, score a bunch of points. I mean, truly, Heupel's known. He's known for offense anyway, and I think – in this case, I agree. I would have major concerns about Tennessee's defense, and so certainly I think the answer is to try to win high scoring affairs. You look at Heupel defenses historically, and let's go back to when he was an offensive coordinator at Missouri. Now you could say, okay, what did he have to do with the defense? He was the offensive coordinator, but I think the way he plays offense does affect the defense somewhat. In both years he was the OC at Missouri, Missouri allowed more than 30 points per game. You look at last year at UCF, UCF averaged like 44 points per game, but surrendered 32 points per game. So I think Heupel is comfortable operating in that space, where the opponent's scoring 30-plus. So you just got to be prepared to pile up even more points. I think that's going to be a challenge, obviously, against the better opponents on Tennessee's schedule. I mean, they're not going to get into a horse race with Alabama in Prevail. But I think when you get in those games against, let's say, Missouri, South Carolina, Kentucky, Pitt, you say, okay, take your best shot. And you know it's going to be a high-scoring game, but you just hope you can outscore them. Because, absolutely, I think Tennessee's defense has limitations up and down the group. And I think of all the numerous things that are going to be a hurdle for Heupel to overcome in year one, I think that's one of the biggest.
Of course, Blake writes for the whole conference now for USA Today Network. So, Blake, I got to get your assessment of all that we've seen in the last few weeks. Texas, Oklahoma, the 12-team playoff maybe delayed, and all kinds of people in Texas are taking shots at Texas now. What where do you think this leads, what do you think the impact, larger impact, is on college football?
Well, yeah, let's unpack the 12-team playoff being delayed. That's one of those where I say careful what you wish for there, other conference commissioners. If you're going to fire back at the SEC by saying, well, we're not going to do this 12-team playoff after all, well, that's fine. You add Oklahoma into the fold, and it's not going to be long before the SEC's packing three teams into a four-team playoff. So you don't want to go to 12? That's fine. The SEC will just make a four-team playoff its own little playoff. I like the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. I think it's going to be entertaining for the SEC. I think it restores some football rivalries. It's going to be a shame if we lose Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, no doubt. But Texas A&M was one of my favorite rivalries every year. That game, you know, normally played around Thanksgiving. In the last, say, 20 years of that rivalry, it was pretty competitive. We saw it swing back and forth numerous times. So I love the restoration of that rivalry. You get Texas, Arkansas back. You get Missouri, Oklahoma back. Like, the last round of realignment was horrible for rivalries in college football. I mean, as we know, geography and rivalries and matchups, they don't fuel these expansions and realignment. It's television contracts and money and power. However, I do think one of the kind of the subplots of this realignment or this expansion is the SEC at least does gain some compelling rivalries. Now, like I said, the Big 12, you know, it's set to lose the Oklahoma State rivalry, but then, and that's a shame. But I love what it does for the SEC. And yeah, we can all crack jokes at Texas, and some of those are warranted. You know, how many times haven't we heard Texas is back when they really aren't, and sort of like the Vols are back. However, if you look at overall athletic departments, Texas has a great top-to-bottom athletic department. I mean, this not only is compelling in football, which is what drives these moves along with money, I think this is great for all SEC sports. I mean, like I said, Texas has a very stout top-to-bottom athletic department. I believe they're coming off of a Learfield Director's Cup triumph, right, for whatever that's worth.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oklahoma, I mean, not only is it going to help in football, but you got the softball program, you got gymnastics. So the Big 12's loss is the SEC's gain. And as far as everybody taking cheap shots at Texas from the state of Texas, I mean, I think that's the typical move in a breakup, right? Whenever your girlfriend, your boyfriend upgrades to someone better, you try to take a few cheap shots out the door when deep down, you know, we missed out here. Where do we turn now after this?
I'm here for it, though.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be hot.
Oh, yeah. It's entertaining. It's entertaining. It's petty, but it's entertaining. You know, I thought Mac Rhodes' comments were his cryptic comments.
Yes.
I didn't really understand. The Baylor athletic director, he was really trying to land a punch there. And it's like Mac Rhodes, when he left Missouri, I was covering Missouri at that time. Missouri fans were ready to throw a parade when Mac Rhodes left as athletic director. Like, nobody liked him there. He had a miserable experience as athletic director, and he slunk off back down to Texas, where he came from, to become Baylor's AD. And now he's taking cheap shots. Like, Mac Rhodes, who are you to take shots at him? But still, it's good theater.
Blake Topmeyer, SEC columnist for the USA Today Network, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Blake, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. We'll respond a little bit to what Blake had to throw out there coming up next. Take your thoughts on the Vols as well. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And I have Ben Arthur from the Tennessean coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll talk Titans and training camp with him. So looking forward to that conversation. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Going back to the choice is yours question about movies and the role that you would live out in a movie. You can experience one movie and live out the plot. Got a vote, a couple of votes for Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars. The question then becomes,
What character?
I would go Vader. Vader in that movie would be pretty awesome.
So you'd like to chop off your son's hand?
Yes, correct.
Okay, cool.
Sorry, future son of mine.
Wear that horrible suit and try to breathe through it?
Yes, I
would. I don't know, man. I think I might just do like, well, actually, I was going to say R2-D2, but actually in that movie he gets all taken apart and they run around with him like with a box of his legs all flying around. Yeah, so never mind. Lando Calrissian. I'll go there. Okay. Got like your your cloud city. Yeah. That's kind of sweet. Until it gets invaded. It's tough.
Kind of a traitor, too. So,
yeah.
There's that.
True. Yeah. There is that.
Have you come up with a movie yet?
Well, I came up with one.
I know.
Well, I mean, I know.
You were searching for others.
I know. What, did someone throw on there Dirk Diggler and Boogie Nights?
Yes, they did.
Okay. All right. I'll leave that with no further comment. Yes.
Got a text that says, I want to be the character of Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai. It's a good movie.
I have not seen that one.
Yeah, it's not bad.
How about Tom Cruise in Cocktail?
I have not seen that one.
Yeah. What about Will
Bartending,
Ferrell?
Bartending, Islands, Elizabeth Shue. What's that?
It's not bad.
I was going to say Will Ferrell in Kicking and Screaming.
That's a pretty good one.
Oh, it's
a good
movie. Soccer coach?
Yeah.
There you go.
And Robert Duvall, the dad in that one. That's pretty good. Like Will Ferrell's dad.
Right.
It's a pretty good
right.
movie.
I mean, there's a lot of... I do like like Thor, you know, having superpowers. I mean, yeah. You know, Superman.
Give me Thor.
Those are, but I like, like the little bow, like the ability to dunk on people.
Well, I will fully admit, half the reason I'm picking Thor is to just have hair again. It'd be great. Having hair like that, be awesome.
Flowing hair.
Flowing hair.
And keep the beard.
I've not had that ever.
I hear you.
Let's go back to
the hammer.
Let's go back to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matt from Camden texting in. What is a realistic expectation for the Vols this year? I think winning your non-conference games and beating Vanderbilt is realistic. So that would give Tennessee 5 wins at that point. Okay. What are realistic expectations for Tennessee?
I think it's realistic to find 6 wins. And I'm not saying lock it, they're going to get 6 wins, but I think that's realistic. I think... There are several swing games on the schedule. I would put South Carolina in that category, put yep. Vanderbilt in that category. I put Pittsburgh in that category too. Some people wouldn't. I definitely would. Yeah, and even, I don't know, like Kentucky
should be better than Tennessee this year.
Flat out.
It's that game that Tennessee, for whatever reason, I mean, they've just dominated Kentucky. Now, last year notwithstanding.
And look, I mean, if this offense operates at a high level and you find a quarterback who can operate at a high level, and the one thing about Kentucky, as we know, is Stoops has built a terrific program, and they've got a lot of talent up and down the roster. It's in better shape than I ever would have guessed Kentucky football would be. They have struggled to pass the football. So, yes, Michelle in there celebrating. Raise the roof. But you could go in there. You have a good day offensively. You could outscore that team on a given Saturday.
Yeah.
Possible.
Yeah.
I think six wins, you know, if you start out even up and you show some good things on offense, you do what what people want to see on offense. Hopefully you show, some future with some guys on defense and get some stops here and there. I think that'd be a pretty good year for Josh Heupel in year one.
Well, you were at Tennessee's Media Day yesterday. What stood out to you from Josh Heupel and company yesterday at Media Day in Knoxville?
Well, I mean, I've written my column at TheAthletic.com in which I become a complete Josh Heupel.
Did you know Joe writes for The Athletic?
There you go. I'm
big Josh Heupel fan.
I am celebrating Josh Heupel. Yes. But really, I am celebrating him, and it's more than just that it's good for media that he's open with his program. It is good for fans. You're going to know more about Josh Heupel's program than you did about Jeremy Pruitt's, a lot more. You're going to get more, varied and different kinds of stories. You're going to know the people in it better. Does that replace your team winning? No. But if you like following, your favorite team, it's going to be a better experience. But I think there's a benefit to that for the program. He talked about recruiting as a benefit. He's got to be as open as he can be, and he gets it. And I just think that he's hit the right notes so far in this admittedly honeymoon period where we haven't seen any awful losses on the field and all that stuff. And I don't know if he'll hang in there through all the ups and downs of being the head coach of that program. But he seems to have the right demeanor to be able to push some stuff aside, focus on the job. And look, because of what's happened with this program, now some Vols fans would disagree with me, but if he does get it to like where it's a reliable 8-win program again, that's an achievement, and I think people will appreciate that to a certain point. At some point, then it's got to be more than that. But if he gets that done, then he will have revived some things, and that's where Tennessee has to get. They have to get there first.
Absolutely. And look, this is going to be a slow build if you're Josh Heupel. I think you've got to know that coming into it. Fall camp underway today for the Vols. Adam Sparks tweeting out Hendon Hooker, Joe Milton up first in the QB drills. Also says don't read into that. Seriously, stop. I said stop reading into it.
Well, yesterday they put them in order. The order yesterday was Milton, Bailey, Hooker, Maurer. So you could look at is that the depth chart, top to bottom?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
They're all going to get real reps this week.
I would say so.
They are.
Then you'll cut that quarterback competition down. Real quickly on our text line, Chris texting in. That was C-3PO that gets taken apart, not R2-D2.
Oh, yeah.
So you could be R2.
I apologize. I said R2-D2, but in my head I was thinking C-3PO.
Yeah.
He's the one who gets – he's like yelling, and he's in a box. Yeah. Correct. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be – R2 be okay.
Yeah. Just roll around, unlocking doors and whatnot.
Just firing out little lightsabers at whoever needs them.
Yeah, why not? When we come back, we'll be joined by Ben Arthur from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on Titans training camp thus far. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking Titans. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Ben Arthur from the Tennessean, who covers the Titans. Ben, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing great. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Ben, the first full day of pads yesterday in training camp. What stood out to you yesterday with the pads coming on for the first time for the Titans?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the defensive line. I think they really balled out that first day in pads on Tuesday. You know, I think that the Nico Autry showed some of why, you know, the Titans paid him, you know, good money this offseason to come and be disruptive inside on that defensive line. We saw him do some, you know, good things in one-on-ones as well as team drills, and then I saw Larrell Murchison get in the backfield. I saw Jeffrey Simmons get in the backfield. It was a very good day for the defensive line, stout against the run. They made Ryan Tannehill uncomfortable on a few of those passing plays as well, and I think that kind of rubbed off on the entire defense, which I think is, you know, kind of these past few days of camp have really found their confidence and their swagger, and that definitely has to be a good sign for coaches and for fans of this team who really need this defense to play much better in 2021 to support this explosive offense that they have.
Ben, what's been the most surprising thing about this camp for you so far?
Ooh, most surprising. Well, I'd have to say Racy McMath. I mean, sixth-round wide receiver out of LSU, you know, the Titans drafted him to be just really a special teams guy, but I think he's flashed. He's turned some heads as a wide receiver. You know, just his ability to high point the ball, some of the touchdowns he's hauled in, just showing some really good things, you know, offensively that I don't think, you know, a lot of people were kind of anticipating. And then you look at the way the Titans coaches talk about him, from, you know, offensive coordinator, you know, Todd Downing to Mike Vrabel, you know, to A.J. Brown the other day, saying his upside reminds him a little bit of Julio Jones. You know, I see this guy, I mean, I know it's very early in training camp at this point. There's only been, you know, one day in pads so far, but you know, at this point in time, I see Racy McMath, you know, on that, you know, initial 53-man roster, and that's not something I would have anticipated going into camp late last month.
Ben, a lot of talk so far about Anthony Firkser, and obviously Delanie Walker's made some strong comments. Kevin Byard made some strong comments last week as well about Anthony Firkser and their belief in his ability. From what you've seen so far in camp, do you believe Firkser is ready to be a number one tight end in the NFL?
I do. I think it kind of remains to be seen, you know, what all he's going to be able to do as a blocker, right? And I think that's the big thing with him. We know how much of a, you know, how great of a pass catcher he has been, you know, these past 3 years with the Titans, but he has been, you know, a liability as a blocker. And we just had our, you know, the Titans just had their first day in pads on Tuesday. As camp kind of progresses, we'll have to see, you know, how he looks kind of in line, you know, being able to block, you know, but I think he does have the ability to be a top flight, you know, tight end. We'll kind of see how, you know, it develops for him and, you know, throughout the course of, these, you know, next several, you know, padded practices. But, you know, I think he's ready to, you know, ascend into that top, you know, tight end role. And, you know, he mentioned how he's put on, 5 pounds. You know, he's talked about just how being, you know, kind of a smaller guy, you know, he has to kind of use his quickness to his advantage, you know, as a blocker. He's not going to overwhelm people per se, but using his quickness to get his hands on people and using, you know, kind of that low center of gravity, you know, could do him well. But I guess it's going to kind of be, we'll have to wait and see kind of how that develops. But I think, at least the Titans are definitely confident in him that he could be their top tight end going into the season.
Talking to Ben Arthur, Titans beat writer for the Tennessean. So Ben, I've got to throw another comparison question at you. As someone who covered the Seahawks previously, now you've seen this team operating for a while. Just overall, you know, just the quality of this team, maybe the way they do things, and of course, going from Pete Carroll to Mike Vrabel. What's that been like?
Ooh,
that's a lot.
Let's see. I think first of all, both, you know, Pete Carroll and Mike Vrabel are, you know, players coaches. I think guys, you know, really trust them. I think they both, with in both cases, players feel like they can confide in them. I think, you know, Vrabel more so because he was a player. You know, he's won Super Bowls. You know, he's played at the highest level in the NFL. You know, Pete Carroll did, you know, play back in the day, but he is much older. But I think there's something about his personality that guys gravitate to and you know, they feel like they want to play hard for. So I think that's been the biggest thing, you know, them being, you know, more players coaches. I honestly think that's been kind of the main thing. I think, you know, more organizationally, you know, John Schneider and Pete Carroll are somewhat similar to Mike Vrabel and John Robinson in the culture that they've instilled, you know, with, you know, kind of the respective franchises before Pete and John came in, you know, for the Seahawks. They had a, you know, a few years where they had kind of lost their ways a little bit. And, you know, from the beginning, you know, Pete and John are going on year 11 in Seattle. I think they've really been able to establish a nice foundation, a culture in place that has kind of stuck, you know, with the changing of personnel year in and year out. And I think we've seen the same thing with Mike Vrabel and J-Rob as well. You know, J-Rob, you know, coming in 2016, you know, him helping to turn the culture around, and then Vrabel coming in a couple years later. I think they've really set a tone for this Titans franchise that, you know, used to kind of be, you know, at the bottom, you know, of the AFC. And I think they've, you know, kind of found an identity. And so I think, you know, there are, you know, a few similarities in that regard, you know, if you look at the Seahawks and the Titans.
So, Ben, kicking field goals for this team has become a bit of a soap opera over the course of the last couple of years. And obviously the Titans placed Blake Hawbell on waivers on Sunday. Sam Ficken comes in from the Jets. How did Tucker McCann and Sam Ficken look yesterday kicking field goals?
Yeah, they both look great, you know. Both 6 for 6 on field goals. And you know, yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is just consistency, right? I think, you know, just being out on the field each day, it's like you never know what you're going to get. Like one day you get a 3 for 5, a 4 for 6 type situation. The next day they're perfect or close to perfect. And that kind of just defines what the Titans kicking situation has been the last couple years. And it's really just a matter of them finding a guy who each and every practice is going to give you, you know, if not 100%, close to 100% on those field goals. And I think that's what it comes down to, right? The kickers, both Ficken, who came in, you know, like you said, and then McCann, they both had what I thought, you know, are good days yesterday, but it's a matter of, you know, can they have a good day today? Can they have another great day on Thursday when they get back to practice? Can they, you know, continue to stack those days? I think that's what the Titans are looking for, a consistent kicker. Not a guy who's going to have one good day at practice, but a guy who's going to be able to sustain, you know, that great kicking throughout, you know, training camp and the preseason.
Ben, you think the backup quarterback competition is over at this point? Or do you still think DeShone Kizer can make a run here at Logan Woodside?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say it's over. I mean, right, I mean, I think the biggest, I mean, practices are, you know, very important, but I think we also have to wait till the preseason games start up, you know, beginning not this weekend, but the following weekend in Atlanta. You know, how do, you know, there are a lot of guys who can, you know, look good in practice, but how do they look in an actual game setting? And so I think that will, once preseason hits, I think we'll really see if, you know, Logan Woodside can gain more distance on DeShone Kizer in that battle, or if Kizer can close the gap a bit. But you know, kind of as you alluded to, Woodside has been the better, you know, quarterback through, you know, in practices. I feel like he's made, you know, better decisions. He's not forcing things as much as Kizer. So, you know, I wouldn't say that this battle is over. I think, you know, what we're still going to see, you know, how this develops over the next few weeks here as we get into the preseason. But for sure, Woodside, this is, at this point, I think this is, you know, Woodside has been the front runner in that competition.
Ben Arthur from the Tennessean has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro, does a great job covering the Tennessee Titans. Ben, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Thanks for having me on, guys. You have a good one.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
you, Ben. As well. Ben Arthur from the Tennessean, our guest here on Robbie and Retro. We'll be right back, react to what Ben had to say, look ahead to another day of training camp coming up for the Titans as well, including some interesting comments made yesterday by defensive coordinator Shane Bowen. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville SC and the New England Revolution have a huge match to take over first place in the Eastern Division this Wednesday night, which is tonight. Join us for a fun watch party at Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. You can enjoy great beer specials on Heineken, plus they'll be giving away tickets to the next Nashville home game. Mark your calendar and watch Nashville SC take on the New England Revolution tonight at 6 p.m. at Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap Room, 1003 Russell Street in East Nashville. By the way, speaking of Nashville SC, later this morning, your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game, you win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. So we'll have that opportunity coming up for you later today at 9:45 here on the show. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Thanks to Ben Arthur from the Tennessean for joining us in the last segment. And Joe will pay close attention again today in training camp for the Titans to the kicking situation. As Ben mentioned, both Tucker McCann and Sam Ficken, 6 for 6 yesterday, kicking field goals. Ficken was kicking yesterday, as you so aptly said yesterday on the program.
He was frickin' kicking.
Yeah, he was.
That Ficken. Yeah, 6 for 6. It's a good start. See if they can stack them. And just like with the QB thing, as Ben was talking about there in the backup QB battle, because it's, you know, it's going to be all them, the kicking battle ramps up during those situations, which, of course, were not available last year. So Greg did this face app thing, you as Thor.
Yeah.
It doesn't look any different. Like, you are Thor, just without the long blonde hair. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's going to be the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Never knew I looked so good.
Okay, I didn't actually know that was your face. I thought it was just Thor.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's really not that much of a difference.
Yeah, it was a great day in the history of our show.
You are.
I think this is why
shiny domed Thor.
This is probably why God did not allow me to have hair,
because it's so cocky.
I mean, if I did, let me tell you,
I don't think I would look as good as little
in
Bow.
Trouble. In trouble. My goodness. Gregory Anderson on Twitter pointing out or doing a nice face app of myself and Chris Hemsworth.
That's wild.
Swapping it out.
Man.
You know, there have been that say, like, I used to walk into this establishment on Broadway and the band would be playing, then they say I look like Chris Pratt, which, no, I don't. But, you know, if this face app is any indication, I kind of do look like Chris Hemsworth.
I mean, I'm looking at this right now and it doesn't look any different. Crazy, man.
Thanks, Greg.
Is the beard a little different? I guess the beard's a little different.
A little bit different.
But, you know, you could always trim your beard to be just like his.
Yeah.
You should get, like, a big blonde wig and just walk around and see if people think that you're him.
Now I just got to work on, like, the Thor workout plan. Because let me tell you, that's not going well.
Yeah, I guess they wouldn't think you were him unless maybe in the wintertime. Yeah. You had a big puffy winter jacket on or something, so. You know?
He's a little bit more chiseled than I am.
Yeah. Just, you know, do a little CrossFit, a few weeks.
Just a few weeks? You'll be there. Yeah, let's see if I can work
like these
on that.
If you're like these Russian athletes,
yeah,
you know, playing volleyball.
Maybe taking
They got a way to get there fast.
Yeah, some alternative substances may be involved at that point, too. See what happens on that front. Joe, some interesting comments yesterday from Shane Bowen, Titans defensive coordinator. About his title, you and I and a lot of people spent a lot of time last year when the defense was struggling discussing why Shane Bowen was not made defensive coordinator. A lot of people thought it was a big deal. Some Titans fans thought, what's a big deal? Why are we talking about this? Well, Shane Bowen was asked about that yesterday and whether or not it's made a big difference having the title of defensive coordinator, even on the field with the team. Here's what Shane Bowen had to say yesterday at his media session.
Not just said that you guys feel more comfortable with you in year two. The fact that your role was actually clearly defined this offseason, do you think that has helped clearly define a lot of their roles?
Yes, absolutely. I do. I think it's helped. I think just with everybody, with the coaching staff, with the players, I think it's been good up to this point. They kind of understand where the buck stops, and it is what it is. So I'm excited for the opportunity. I really am. I'm excited the way these guys are going about working right now and kind of what we're trying to get accomplished on defense.
So that was Shane Bowen yesterday saying, absolutely, having the title makes a difference. People know where the buck stops when it comes to Shane Bowen on the field. So it didn't felt like Vrabel, at least publicly, thought that was a big deal last year. It seems to be a pretty big deal to Shane Bowen at this point that he's received the title as defensive coordinator, and I guess at least in his estimation so far, making a difference on the field as well.
Well, I mean, let's go back to, like, why have titles? What is the point of having a title?
Yeah.
So that people know what your job is. I mean, it could have been Arthur Smith, tight ends coach, who also does offensive plays.
Could be.
But he was the offensive coordinator. Worked out well for him. So it's natural. I mean, and I do think the other people aspect of that is what's probably underrated. You know, Shane Bowen getting to just think about the defense is big, and not coach outside linebackers is big. But everyone else knowing, okay, it's Shane. Shane is in charge. Makes it clear for everyone. This is why, go across the league, you'll find head coach and you'll find defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator. They have titles. It's pretty common practice.
It is.
So, now, if someone said, Shane, would things have been different last year if you had the title? First of all, I'd probably be like, well, I'm not going to talk about last year.
Right.
But, I mean, I would have my doubts that it would have. Maybe I'm wrong. And I'm not saying, you know, the coaching was just fantastic last year, but I think last year was more of a personnel problem than anything.
Well, I think so, too. But I also, moving from that to now, even if it's a personnel problem again, Shane Bowen, to me, is not going to be given a benefit of the doubt, at least by Titans fans. Now, in the building, they may view it completely differently. And at the end of the day, that's really what matters, is how the people in the building view it. But I know that whether the defense is bad this year because of Shane Bowen or the defense is bad this year because of the personnel, if it happens again, Titans fans are going to be irate at Shane Bowen, and they're going to be calling for his job. I mean, there's not going to be any way around that if you're him this year.
Yeah, it goes to the territory. And look, if they're really bad, then I think it's fair to say, first of all, look at the personnel. There's going to be some choices in it. You know, like Bud Dupree probably doesn't work out. You know, maybe Caleb Farley doesn't get out of the field much. Whatever it is, there's going to be personnel reasons for it.
Sure.
But you're also an NFL defensive coordinator. I mean, you're expecting that person to elevate your talent, right? You're expecting that person to get more than some players think they can get out of themselves and to bring it all together and be one of the best football coaches on the planet. I mean, how many people ever get a chance to be an NFL defensive coordinator? So when your team with this kind of expectations overall, that just comes with the territory. And when you're an inexperienced coordinator, sometimes they do get the job too quickly or it just, it doesn't work out for them. It was always going to be tough for whoever followed Dean Pease,
sure.
Which is probably part of the answer on last year why there wasn't the title given too, but that's over now.
So Ben, in the last segment, pointing out that another good day for the defense with the full pads coming on, especially on the line. Jeffrey Simmons having a good day. Murchison, he brought up as well. You brought up Murchison and Tierre Tart. It's been a pretty good run the last few days for the defense. Is that starting to give you a little hope that maybe the defense can be better this year and maybe significantly better? Or maybe are we reaching the point of concern with the offense, albeit realizing Derrick Henry's not been a part of it and Julio Jones wasn't even out there yesterday?
Yeah, I'm not there with concern with the offense. And again, we've talked about Tannehill. He's letting it rip, and he's not necessarily going to play on a Sunday like he does in camp. 22-2, they're looking a lot different when those guys are out there. Yep. 18, Josh Reynolds has not been out there. I'd say I think it's positive that defense is running around making plays. I think some individuals have looked good, like Jenkins has looked good. He looks like a good pickup at corner. He kind of brings some of what Malcolm Butler brought, but he runs better at this point than Malcolm Butler runs, so that's important. I will say that one thing you notice that was badly missed, as much as we talk about Lawan going out last year, when they lost Jayon Brown, that was a big loss for that defense, and he looks really good out there. And we know what he is. He's a playmaker.
Yep.
So, yeah, look, I mean, there's certainly a way for this defense to be decent. It's just you're still, not seeing any of Bud Dupree yet. We still really haven't seen this team take on a physical, running attack. I mean, I know that's starting up with pads. There's just so much still to learn. Everything has been, it's overall positive. You just don't want to jump to conclusions.
All right, our buddy Christopher on Periscope texting in on Twitter. Joe, biggest question is when the heck are you going to get a new computer? There's a lot of people right now in these group press conference settings. They're taking some shots at you, man, on the computer setup that you've got with the laptop and the full-size keyboard as well plugged in with the USB port. A lot of shots being thrown at Rex Rhodes' direction lately.
Yeah, Mike Wilson, he made sure to get one out. Buck got me the other day. Well, listen, it's on the schedule. I have to find the time to go to a place. And I've taken it to the place, and they said, turn it upside down and knock stuff out, and it's probably fine. Well, now, as you know, there's no keys that work, so
no.
I need to go to a place.
It's totally destroyed by someone who will not be mentioned. Me.
But maybe it's kind of a funny. It's kind of like branding.
Yeah. Comes Rex Rowe with his keyboard.
Look at that dork with his alt keyboard on top of the regular keyboard.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll get it fixed soon.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans when we come back. Got a couple of your thoughts to get to as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll also discuss what is the minimum standard of success for this Titans team. What is the minimum benchmark that they've got to hit in order for you to consider it a successful season? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.